Hey, I'm Hannah and welcome to Greener Fields, a podcast all about travel, immigration and living in Ireland in your 20s and 30s. During these conversations, I chat with Irish people at home and abroad all about their realities and experiences. We discuss the highs, the lows and everything in between, from friendships, connections, mental health, work and so much more, to help you decide for yourself where the grass is greener, either on the other side or just wherever you water it. Thanks for listening. Andre, you are very welcome to Greener Fields. How are you getting on today?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm doing good. As I was saying just before we started, it's one of those ones where I'm sort of on the wind down. Like, it's a weird one in a conversation like this, which is talking about, like, what do you or do you not change your life? And I'm kind of in between jobs at the minute. That's a bit, yeah, it's a bit of a change within a change, which makes the conversation a bit more interesting for me.
Hopefully so. I think all these conversations, they almost, like, I always say they're about travel and immigration and things like that, but they're actually about people and decision making, yeah. Specifically as like a young adult, or hopefully I can continue to classify myself as a young adult, but I'm gonna hold on to that title for as long as I possibly can. But before we get into the decision making, changes, work, life, everything like that, I would really appreciate if you wouldn't mind telling myself and all our listeners a little bit about who you are, like a brief introduction for those who don't know you.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, as you already said, Andre is the name, you know, but I'm 25, and I grew up in Derry, up in the north, and was there until, well, was in the north until about 18 months ago. Did the typical thing, you know, grew up in Derry and then went to Belfast for university. It was one of those ones where, like, when I was getting ready to look at university, there was other options and there was options abroad, but I was like, I had to do it yet or whatever. So I ended up staying in Belfast. So it was only an hour and a half up the road. But whenever I was growing up, you know, like, I was sort of around people leaving Ireland a lot. Like, my dad worked away a lot when I was a kid, you know, in Saudi Arabia and England, and I seem to recall Russia for a moment. And my brother moved away whenever he went to university. And so it was something that I was always around. But, you know, I went to university in Belfast, and because of COVID, I stayed because it was really hard to get an opportunity outside. But life sort of started to settle down, and I was sort of getting settled down with someone, and life was looking like it was going to go down a certain path. But I kept looking for jobs outside of Northern Ireland. I was like, oh, no. I was like, it just isn't leaving me alone. It was like an itch. It just, you know, whatever it was. But yeah, so I ended up moving about 18 months ago. And I've been living in London in this, as you can see through the video, this massive mansion that I have here, for some time. But yeah, so I've been living here for 18 months, and once again, life seems to be settling down, but it's outside of Ireland, which is shocking to me.
Amazing. And I think, you know, again, this conversation, and it's funny, I'm thinking, if suddenly when we start thinking about different places people have immigrated to, I think back to the conversations where we've had people from Derry, but also people living in London. And it's funny, no conversation is the same because everyone's story to get there and their experience of it is so different. And that's kind of what I love about this podcast, again, as a biased consumer, but also producer of the whole thing. I think we can never hear too many takes of a similar story. And for yourself, you know, growing up in Derry, you know, going to college in Belfast, all these different things, I think they help give us a little bit of context into where you are now. And I'd love you to give me a little bit more context into, I guess, your life growing up, you know, growing up in Derry, school, the highs and lows of it, the kind of, you know, because I think those kind of fundamental years, we think back in them now and they're like, oh my God, it all makes sense in hindsight. But, you know, like, our experience of Ireland growing up can and maybe does have an impact on whether we decide to stay or go. And I guess I would love to hear a little bit of context from yourself.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly as you say, context is everything in these situations, you know. And like, even though I have to preface this entire conversation by saying I love Derry with a passion and I love Ireland with a passion. Like, any single person that you will speak to in my life in London will tell you that I need to stop talking about it immediately. But whenever it came to me growing up at home, like, not that my family wasn't close, like, my sort of inner family was, like, my parents and my brother, we were really, really close, really tight-knit group. But beyond that, it wasn't really a thing. And sort of, well, it's an Irish thing, but it's a Derry thing as well. Is like, you know, someone's auntie lives around the corner and their granny lives two streets away, and all these things tend to happen. But for me, that just wasn't the case, which was sort of a blessing and a curse in a way. Like, you know, there wasn't an anchor there at any time. And like I said before, you know, I was growing up in 10 years was sort of normal, as normal as you'd like, you know. I was very lucky in a way. Obviously each their own life decisions, but because my mom wasn't very well, she was always at home, so I always had my mom around. That was lovely. But as well as that, like, my dad worked a typical 9 to 5, right? It was the typical family story of the two parents and the two kids and all this kind of stuff. But whenever I was about 10, obviously 08 recession hit, and my dad just had to go somewhere else for a job, as a lot of people did. And what it showed me was, like, okay, what these things that you hold on to, they're not forever. What's worth holding on to, what's not. And my mom was one of these people. Like, she would boot me up the backside, tell me to get out. She was like, there's nothing here, you gotta get out of here, and all this kind of stuff. And but you know, as much as I love Derry and as much as I love Ireland, like, Derry, I look at it and it really makes me sad in a way, because it's so much potential, but it just isn't fulfilled yet. Like, you look at an example, it was like my girlfriend at the minute, she lives up in York, and you've got two walled cities of a similar population. One is thriving and one is not. And it's kind of sad to look at in a way. But yeah, like I said, then I was sort of going through school, had my mates. But what I found was my friends were sort of in phases. So the friends that I made in primary school didn't carry in to high school. Friend of mine in high school, like, there's only one or two I'd really speak to still. And as a result, I kind of liked that my childhood or me growing up was like phases of my life, which is kind of nice. But yeah, I got into a relationship when I was 15. That went on 7, 8 years, engaged, the whole thing. Like I said, life looked like it was going to go a certain way. But you know, whenever my dad came back and, oh God, my 2014, yeah, it was a while ago. But all the while I was looking at it, and my brother was away, and I did the typical Irish thing. I looked at Australia. I was like, get me to Australia. It looks so sunny. I've never been, but yeah, it looks amazing, right? Looked at the US and Canada and, you know, the Middle East, because my dad was there, like Dubai, Qatar, all this kind of stuff. Until London came calling, and it was just something I couldn't really say no to, you know?
I guess for yourself, the fact that you probably saw emigration, maybe not just like in other people's lives, but like kind of with your dad now, he had emigrated, but he had moved abroad to work. I guess that, in my head, it would make sense to me how you could see that, there is still, you can still maintain connection with family when we're not all together. You kind of maybe saw something slightly different than, if you were going to go on that Titanic ship and never come home and never stay in touch, I guess with your dad, you could see that those things kind of stayed put. There was like a maintained kind of level of family and home, even when people weren't always home.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't get rid of him. I mean, the man was phoning constantly. Like, he was literally my alarm clock when I was a kid. He phoned me every morning at 7:30 and going, get you to school now quickly. And I was like, well, what are you going to do about it? You're miles away. Like, you know what I mean? But no, I think what it was for me in terms of seeing it around, it was normal. It was just so normal. And it wasn't this, like, oh my God, everything's going to change if I leave. But like, when my dad went to Saudi Arabia, he was, what, 2009? And this was just as Skype was starting. So we had, like, the, just thinking back to it now, this like chunky computer that was about the size of an absolute house. And it was sitting at the end of the table with a webcam that 0.2 megapixels. And it was just like, oh, it's like he's in the room. And yeah, like, that was just part of life. And it was, as you say, the connection wasn't really ever broken. Like, don't get me wrong, when he came home, it meant a lot. And like, there was always these big momentous, like, I remember he's one of these ones that shows up and he's like, I'm going to surprise everybody, and I'm so important that it's going to mean the world to everybody. A trope which I've since copied, but that's a whole different story. But like, it was obviously something that was just around the house, but it was around, you know, my extended family's lives, of like, okay, you move, you get on with it. And if it's for you, if it's not, you know, like, my dad was away for what, a year in Saudi, 4 years in England, and then came back, and that's just what happened. It was, you know, I feel like I'm rambling, but yeah, it just wasn't a big deal for us.
No, and I guess that sense of normality, I think it's kind of how I think a lot of people our age are now, I think, connecting to the thoughts of emigration. It's that, I would feel like if I was to list every single person in their 20s that I know, I would feel like half or at least half are not here in this country. And I'm not sure if it was actual numbers, but I think back of all the people, all the girls and guys in school, all the people I know from college, sports teams, I'm like, at least half of all those things feel like they're not here, like they're in Australia or Canada or things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it was just, I'm thinking back to my school classes, you're talking, and like, as you say, at least half of them, it was just everyone, like, everyone went to England for university in my school anyway. It seemed like 80% of them did it. There was a few that went to America and stuff, and you think to, like, what is there, like 6 million people in Ireland, but like 80 million Irish passport holders. Like, it is just, I think you've described it yourself as this, it's an island of people who leave, and it's just, it is what it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and even the most recent or second most recent podcast that we launched whilst recording this one was with CrossCare Irish Diaspora Support, and for them they describe it as like the global Irish community. And you know, again, it's like this is the first time that we're documenting it on a digital platform, but the story of immigration has, I think, it's part of our history and culture in different ways and different capacities. And I think I may have come into this naively thinking it was just something that we were going through as a 20, 30-year-old population, and that's just simply not true. And I think what we see, I guess, this idea of emigration, or even the fact that this conversation is popular at all, is that because it has become a version of normal, and that's not good, bad, or indifferent. I think it's just the way things are moving. And I guess for yourself, you mentioned there that a lot of your classmates in high school would have gone abroad to England for university, and university is such a pivotal time. And I know people in Ireland, they sometimes move away from home, sometimes not. But you went an hour and a half down the road, and you went to beautiful Belfast. And you know, I've been there a couple of times. I almost went to study there a few times. I am a big fan of the city,
Yeah.
of everything about it. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience of university and I guess the first experience of kind of independence? Because again, it could potentially give us context in as to your decision making to move to London, you know, a couple of months or years after that.
Yeah, like I'm just thinking now, you know, like I'm sure some people listen still live with their mom and dad, like, and I was gonna say you said you did it as well. Yeah, I'd like that, but that's it, right? And it's like I know you've mentioned that you obviously did like exchanges. Like, I think you obviously have lived away from home, but it's that thing of like, my parents drove me up the road in my dad's Jeep at the time. And it was, you know, my parents, my ex in the car, and they drove up and they helped unpack the boxes out the back of the car. And they just went, right, see you later, and just drove straight down the road. And you're like, wait a minute, how do I go to the shops? How do people buy groceries? I don't know how people do life. Life is just intimidating. And you're like, but my mum buys all the groceries and they're always in the fridge. Like, what happens to the regenerative fridge, and where does toilet paper come from? And all these amazing, stupid questions of like, and that's what I found initially. Like, day one was terrifying, and then I did what every 18-year-old does, and I was like, oh, great, let's go out for the night, and then woke up with a sore head and went, wait, no, there's a reason people don't do this every day. And what I found was like, it was actually kind of weird because initially it was like 2 months before I went back into Derry. Like, it was an hour and a half away, and it took me so long to go back because I was enjoying the independence so much. But as time went on, I found myself going back more. Like I said, I had a relationship at the time, and that was in De like she was in Derry and I was in Belfast, so there was a bit of it. Then ended up going, like, I went back to Derry every 2 weeks and she came up every 2 weeks, and it was a nice system and it worked. But in terms of Belfast in general, like, I loved it. I really, really did. I loved Queens. Like, there's a reason it's rated so highly. Like, it was so much fun. And it was like, you ended up on a high street in Belfast and you went, oh my God. Like, I don't know if you've ever looked at a train line map of Ireland. I do because I have a very sad existence in life. But if you look at a train map line of Ireland, it like seems to turn into a chasm on the left-hand side of Northern Ireland, and all the trains just, it's as if trains were never invented. So all the infrastructure and stuff is just in Belfast, these massive buildings and these massive high streets. And like, I'd been to London and I'd been to Florida and stuff, and I'd been to sort of big places that had a lot of stuff there, but Belfast was on our doorstep, and it was so weird that like just up the road there was kind of a big place and like independence of learning and stuff like that. And then you go, oh, first semester I basically failed everything, right, okay, let me focus. And it was learning to be an adult extremely quickly was what I found with Belfast, and it was more the lifestyle more than the place. Like, the place is nice. Like, you know, I ended up living there for what, 6 years. Like, it was really good fun, but it was just one of those ones where the thing at the time was just being an adult, you know.
And I guess this notion of like that being an adult, I think I know I experienced, like I speak about that, going to Waterford for the first time. And again, same thing. I was like, where do I do my shopping? I love, and I still love doing the big food shop for myself because I find the middle aisle as exciting as anyone else does. And again, that's not sad at all. But it's one of those things where I think, you know, again, you described it beautifully. It's this idea that it wasn't necessarily where you were, it was the fact that you were, you know, independent and feeling like an adult for the
Oh
first time.
God, yeah.
It
Yeah, no, like,
was
I could have been, sorry for interrupting, I could have been 3,000 miles away. It was no different than Belfast. Because for me, it was like, if I get home at 4 in the morning, my parents won't know. Like, it was kind of that kind of like, I could get away with anything. And it was like, you know, the only benefit being that, like, if there was an emergency, I could have just popped back down the road. But, you know, realistically, it's about your own pocket of independence. It's where you find, like, okay, if you're sick of growing up at home, where, you know, you could be 2 streets away. Like, I know people who are 2 streets away from their parents and they think they're the most independent people in the world. And it's not to say that's right or wrong. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, do you feel independent? Do you feel like you're doing things on your own? And if you are, then great, you know?
Yeah, I guess this idea of independence is something that comes up a lot because I think like a lot of people will agree that, in historically immigration was for jobs, opportunities. And now I think it's more for independence and potentially you could put in quality of life in that. Like that is what if I think I could sum up these conversations is that for a lot of people, and maybe jobs, better paid jobs, maybe abroad, things like that, but there are the job opportunities are there, but I think it's the lack of being able to move out of your family home, all these different things. And again, it's very individual, but I think if you were to synopsize them, independence or how they feel the best as an adult is something that was big. And I guess for yourself, 6 years in Belfast, you would have probably, like you said, gone through university, lived that life, lived there during the pandemic, it sounds like. And for a lot of people, that would have been good enough as a level of independence. That would have been great job opportunities. It would have been, you would have been away from home, but not too far away, and like a nice middle ground. Like to me, on the outside, sounds like a lovely middle ground. But for some reason, which hopefully you'll let us know, there was something that was like, actually, you still want more. Like you still wanted, maybe it was a better job or better opportunities or more of an adventure, and you made the decision to move to London. Can you tell me a little bit about that time where you were like, 6 years into a very decent stay in Belfast, and why you were kind of underlying thinking, maybe it's still time to emigrate further, like maybe I should move abroad, and where your head was at that point?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one, really, because I think it's safe to say I think I made the decision about 3 years in. Like, you know, it was getting towards the end of the university, and I was already looking at grad jobs out of Northern Ireland, and it was something that I definitely wanted to do. Like I said, I had a relationship at the time, and I was sort of staying for that to see where that was going, but it was sort of fairly obvious that it wasn't going to go where we wanted it to go, not for any bad reason, just wasn't going to work out. So about 3 years in, I started looking, but you know, this was COVID, and it just what nothing was knocking, nothing was happening, and it would have been, God, middle of 2021, that relationship ended, and I sort of was like, okay, now is the time. Like, there's literally nothing that is keeping me here. Like, just go for it. Do, you know, search every day. I genuinely think I must have sent in that 18-month period about 6,000 job applications. I remember there was one day I sent 450. Like, it was like throwing crap at the wall and going, what's sticking? Something has to stick. And to be fair, it was one of those ones where it sort of gave me the base of going, okay, like 2021, we're still in the middle of COVID. I've a lot of time to get this right and make sure that I'm ready to make the move. Because as I said, like, I think to answer your question about it being the middle ground, it was like being half in to a commitment. For me, it was like, I wanted to move, so I moved to Belfast, but it's not really what I wanted to do in the first place. It was settling for Belfast, if that made sense. So yeah, then whenever, because obviously me and the ex were living together, and once I was out of there, I was like, right, I'm gonna get into a situation where nothing is tying me down, like absolutely nothing, no year leases, nothing. And there was a friend of mine who was really, really gracious, and he said, look, I've just bought this apartment. He said, look, you're more than welcome to stay in it, pay me rent, whatever. He said, but at the end of the day, you do not have to stay here. We're not gonna, there's no lease, there's no, you could say no tomorrow and you could just get on a flight, right? And it was one of those ones where I was like, right, now's the time. And this was start of 2022. I did the typical thing of like self-improvement before I go and dropped a load of weight and all these kinds of things. And I was like, right, well, okay, I'm doing all the things now. And it was only actually a friend of mine in England, because I was sort of going back and forward to England a wee bit at this time to see a friend of mine. And she was really good, and she just went, look, seriously, she said, if you ever need somewhere to stay when you get here, you can stay with me, not an issue. You know, I'll help you look for jobs. And I was like, oh, brilliant, you know, fantastic. And she helped work on the CV, and as a result, then it was sort of middle of 2022, it was looking more likely like it was going to happen. And I was sort of more in a place of, I didn't want that Belfast experience of landing and going, oh my God, what do I do? So it was that thing of like, okay, I'm ready now. Let's. And it was sort of when I found myself being ready that the opportunity just sort of presented itself. It was so bizarre. Like, and at one time, like I was looking at London specifically, but there was a company, I think I have to be careful how I say this. There was a company that was doing some work in America, but it was an Irish company. And they were like, we'll take you, pick a city in the Northeast. You can do whatever you want, do some sales or whatever. And I was like, oh, great. And at the time in my head, I was moving to New York. But it was only I went to, I had an interview in just as well, just on the outside of London. And I went to the interview and it was like, this isn't anything. It's not going to be anything important. Like, I committed myself by saying, like, by getting up at 3 in the morning to fly there for a 10:30 interview in the morning. And I was like, yeah, no, it was only a quick trip up the road. This wasn't a hassle at all. Meanwhile, I'm sitting going, I haven't slept. And I was sitting in the interview and kindly brought my mum with me, who was like a cheerleader sitting around the corner in the pub with her cider going, you can do it, son, I believe in you. But yeah, they came back with an offer like straight away and they were like, we want you. And they were offering more than I was wanting at the time for a position that I was not quite qualified for. And they said, look, we believe in you. We think you're the right kind of person. We'd love you to come in, and whatever, but you've got a month. And at that point, I was sitting from someone who might go in the next sort of 3, 4 months to you have 30 days to move. And that's when it really kicked. Like, that month was hectic to say the least.
I guess for me, well, firstly, it sounds like you've got two at least very, very nice friends, the one that let you stay in the apartment, the one that offered to help you with your CV and everything like that. And I guess that just kind of highlights to me, and it'll probably be a question I'll ask in due course. It's this idea of like the value of those connections and the value of, I guess, asking for help or asking for support and actually receiving it from people that you know. And I think, I mean, they sound like wonderful people, but for yourself, it's like, I guess sending off so many job offers, like it was definitely, I guess, if you were to believe in things like that, like a signal to the world that like you really wanted to
Oh,
get
don't, my mother will start to
a
bless herself.
job.
She'll do everything. She'll get the cards out if you keep them.
Exactly. And you were like, I'm getting this job, and then suddenly you do, and you've got 30 days to go, right?
Yeah, 30 days. It was scary. I remember actually it was the 1st of December. So on the 30th, I'm trying to think how many days were in November. Oh my God. It was the 30th of November and we went out for a meal that evening in central London. And we were sitting there like, oh my God. And like, I don't mind, put it this way, I was on the sort of wage that you would earn as a junior in Northern Ireland, which is safe to say, not a lot of money. And we were sitting there and like the money was double. And I was going, this is just terrifying. And I remember my mum was like, look, this isn't scary. They clearly see something in you. That kind of stuff, just the typical, like, believe in yourself. And the next morning, then I had another final stage interview and I just cancelled it. And I was like, look, I want to do this. Because it was only when that friend of mine was like, look, I'll help you with your CV. Like, when I say job offers came flooding in, it was kind of bizarre. Like, it went from silence for 17 months to like 3 in a week. And I was sitting up, like, literally having a coffee outside Buckingham Palace. And it was kind of surreal. Like, it was a sunny day in the 1st of December in London, which, having been here in the previous December, does not happen very often. And I remember my boss at the time, he was on his way out. And I rang him and was like, look, I hate to do this over the phone, but I have to do this today because otherwise, like the way the days worked out, I would have also had to do days in January. But thankfully, the month's notice went over the Christmas break. So I was like, if I do it today, I don't have to work the last 2 weeks of December, which was great. And then it was just go, go, go. And it was like, I don't know, I'm quite a sentimental person when it comes to this kind of stuff. And like, you're entirely right. The friends that I've got, like, they're just the best friends in the world, genuinely. And one of them is still in Northern Ireland, but is someone that, I hold very, very dearly. But it was one of those ones where I was saying goodbye to people and I was having like goodbye drinks and I was like, oh my God. Like, and I was felt like I was leaving people behind. And it was lovely for me. What I really, really liked was that I ended everything on because emigrating is a weird term, right? Because you're moving away. But it depends. As you said, my dad didn't emigrate. He moved for work. There's a difference between the two. You're moving for a set amount of time. I think the difference is intention. I think if you're leaving with zero intention on returning, that's at least for me, that's the way I've always viewed it personally growing up. And for me, I was emigrating. I had no intention to ever come back for a permanent period of time. And it was really lovely to me that I left everything on really good terms with everyone, even if I was never going to speak to them again. Like, very few people go up to the next and be like, oh, do you know what? Thank you for to get me to the position that I was ready to do this, and going up to their parents and saying, look, I'm sure I'll be back to visit, but it's not going to happen. And going up to friends and saying, look, we may never speak again, but at the very least, I'm glad that we got to this point. And it's one of those things that people talk about regret a lot. And, you know, I get asked a lot, like, oh my God, would you not have moved like 5 years ago? And I was like, well, no, because, well, you know, like, okay, yeah, I spent a lot of time in a situation that didn't materialize, but look at the situation I'm in now that would never have happened if I didn't do all the necessary steps to get there. Do you know what I mean? So that month was then just admin. It was finding a flat in 30 days, which was hard. And as you can see, it didn't bring much fruit from the search. It's a 4 by 6 room. You know what I mean? Like, it's not really the best, but you know, it was getting a flat. It was making sure I was set up to drive across, because I brought the car to London, which, FYI, terrible idea. And it was one of those ones where life admin that usually takes about 3 months to do in 2 weeks was extreme. Like, I was having virtual viewings every day, about 6 times a day. I was doing all the paperwork, and meanwhile, I was meant to be doing the notice of a job, which, if anyone's listening, I definitely did that. I did all the work that I said I did. But it was just so, it was so busy, but I loved it because it felt like it was going somewhere, you know?
It really does sound like such an exciting time. And I loved your description of emigration. And I think, you know, when people hear that, I wonder if they'll question like their own version of their own perspective of what emigration means. And I hope that they do, because I'm thinking, like, what does emigration mean to me? Even though I think about it all the time. I think when you hear someone say, like, you know, for yourself that emigration meant potentially no intention of ever coming back. And I think a lot of Irish people probably would there's always that, and I think there's always that feeling of, well, maybe, or you never, don't want to
Someday.
close the doors, or someday, or one day. And I think what we're seeing now is that maybe that's not always the case. Like, in retrospect or long term, we don't know. Again, if this podcast hopefully lasts for 10, 20 years, we may find out. But I guess for yourself, you put all that life admin, you did it in the month, you got the apartment, all that stuff, and then suddenly you were in London, like so many people from Ireland are. And I've only spoken to another girl whose podcast will probably be out either before or after your episode. She is another girl who's another Irish girl in London. And I remember Cormac O'Connor's episode about London. And honestly, my own perspective of London, like, I watched the marathon a couple of days ago, on BBC. It is a city, personally speaking, that I, when I was younger, never had any like affection for. And then I went over about a year ago, and I met a few friends who lived there, and I thought it was the coolest place in the world. Like, I still think, I hopefully will go back in the summer for a couple of days, but I don't think I had seen so many people, heard so many sounds, in a concentrated space. And this is probably because of the pandemic a bit of as well, but I just thought it was so cool. And I think I was beginning to see London the way that a lot of my friends had seen London, which was, you know, the fact that it was a lovely, you know, in their words, a middle ground between Ireland and Australia or Canada, was a city like London, where it was different but maybe not so different, and it was far but maybe not too far. And the fact that there was a global Irish community there was people there, everyone kind of knows someone who's there. And I think it really is, in my perspective, seen as a really great, I think, city of opportunity and adventure and excitement. And I would just want to hear, you know, you've been there, I think, if you said about 18 months, can you tell me about your experience to date? Let's start with the highs, because I'll ask you for the lows to balance it out in due course. But can you tell me like the highlights of living in London the last 18 months after all the work you did to get there?
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking back in my head. It must be 16, 17. It was 1st of January, whatever that is. So, like, literally New Year's Day on the ferry, which was like, oh, happy New Year, I'm off. And, you know, it's so weird to me because London is just like, I mean, for goodness sakes, I'm from Derry. Like, you know, there's a London somewhere in that word if you look hard enough, I'm sure. But it's one of those ones where, like, you think you know a city, and then you move to Belfast and you go, I think I know a city. And then you land in London and you go, oh my God, this isn't like I'd been there visiting. And like, even up to in the year in advance before I moved, I'd been over a few times. I'd sort of gone in for the day, but like, you got into the train station, went to a pub and had a pint, and then went home. And it was sort of weird that I got in, I'd asked to move my start date a week from when I got in, because I was meant to get in the flat on the 2nd of January and start work on the 3rd. And I was like, well, that's a bit fast. So I said, right, give me until the 9th. They were like, yep, not a problem. And I went around and I got the tube in to Piccadilly Circus on my first day. And I was like, I was doing the whole, it was like, I'm trying to think of a film where they come out and they're just dazzled by it all. And you're like, wow, because it's not just the city anymore. It's your city, which is kind of cool. And then you get off the tube and you're looking and you're like, oh my God, it's the Roundels. And even though I've seen these before, but I'm going to see these every day now. And someone two-handed shoved me away from the tube and was like, get out of the way. And I was like, oh, people don't wait here. People don't sit forever and just, you know, waste time. And the example I love of this is, I remember I had that friend of mine who helped me get into London. I had her over when I was staying in Belfast, and we went out to Newcastle in County Down, and we ordered this lovely coffee just at the foot of Slieve Donard, and it was so beautiful. Like, and she was sitting there like tapping her foot, checking her watch, and I was like, what's wrong? And it had taken about 3 minutes to make a coffee. She's like, this is so ridiculous. How can people wait this long? And she was trying to warn me in advance that this was going to happen. She was like, you will get so impatient. It's insane. You will complain if a tube is a minute later than you thought it was. And I was like, nah. I was like, you've never seen buses in Derry. They show up about 4 hours late and someone's like going, oh, sorry, lads. But what it is for me about London is it's just, I think it goes, first time I went back, Derry, I was sitting in a cab home and I'd actually brought my girlfriend, well, my girlfriend now back with me. And we were in the taxi, and the taxi driver was telling me that, you know, he was like, oh, where are you guys coming over from? And we went, oh, London. And there's two reactions to when you say that. One is like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. Tell me everything about it. And the other one is London's rubbish, right? And this guy was the latter. And he turned around and said, oh, there's nothing to do in London. And I was like, you're in Derry. Like, what do you have to do? Like, what? Like, I've been in Derry most of my life, and I was like, there's nothing to do here on a Tuesday night. It's like, other than, you know, sit in a coffee shop or sit in the local pub or something. Like, there's always, and that's the thing, there's always something to do. Like, I find myself in the most weird spots on the most random days of the week. And like, anytime someone comes over, and I love it because I feel like a bit of a tour guide, which is just not true, by the way, if there is any actual tour guys listening to this. But you take them around and you're sitting there at like 8:30 on a Tuesday night, and it's just non-stop. And it's so hard to compute, but it's like, what I love from it is you can go into your apartment, you can have quiet time if you want, right? You can detach from it and whatever. But when you want noise and you want the sort of busyness of life, like London is just, it's like cocaine for people watchers, because you sit there and you just look at it, and there's a million different kinds of people from a million different walks of life and a million different places around the world, and they've all had the same thought, which is, this seems like a cool place. That's what London is for me. It's just so cool. And it's weird because it's the first time I've actually sort of, you know, in advance of this, I did have a think about it and the think about what I liked about it. But, you know, I safe to say I enjoyed my first year there. Like, I did all the things, I saw the shows, I saw Moulin Rouge and all this kind of stuff, and it was great. But, you know, I think what it was for me was what it also brought on a personal level. Like, yes, I have my friends in Northern Ireland who I still have. But I found a whole new group of people, and, you know, people that I work with now, and you know, I found my girlfriend here, and all these things sort of just, but it just sort of happened because there's so many people in so many ways, you can't avoid people. And when you're sort of, I'd put it this way, I think if you're introverted, London's hard, right? I had people who are really introverted and they find London really tough, but they're there for the work opportunities, which, by the way, another massive plus. But if you're an extrovert, London is just the best place in the world because you can talk to anyone about anything. Granted, they might need a pint in them to have that sort of, you know, keep yourself to yourself. If they have a pint in them, they might let it go down a little and then you can let yourself in. But like on my first day, I went into, like, I don't smoke, but I went into a smoking garden in a pub and I just started talking. And I was like, I haven't had this many conversations in one day in my entire life. And then, yeah, the other one, it's job opportunities. Like, I moved and got double my pay overnight. It was scary. And, you know, as well as that, in Northern Ireland, there's this sort of mentality of like, your job is your job. And it's very much like you draw the line there. And, you know, you're kind of lucky to have a job in a way. Like, there's not really much in the way of employee benefits or anything unless you get higher up the ladder a little. But you come to England and it's so hyper competitive. that the companies have to keep up with each other. So they end up sort of going, well, we'll give you this benefit and we'll give you health insurance and we'll give you, and it just keep going and going and going to the point where, like, you know, you're like, oh, would you like a gym in your building? And it's like, I've never known a gym in my building in Ireland ever, like, unless you're like in the center of Dublin or something. But like these really weird things. And I think in a weird way, I found family in London. Like on my first, actually second day of work, they were like, okay, we're going to join on a call from some guys in Cork, because we had some work out in Cork. And I was like, oh, great, happy days. And obviously when you're the only Irish person in the company, you get known as the Irish one. And you join on, and there was this guy in the call. It was so funny, chatting away. And he was like, you look wild familiar. I was like, you look wild familiar. And I ended up doing the digging, and he was genuinely a second cousin. And it was like the level of, like, what I love is that, as you said yourself, Ireland has such an Irish community. And if you know where it is, you can find it. And like, you end up going, oh my God, they do Clonakilty here. I have to take about 200 of them home, please. But, you know, it's like it's home, but it's not. And it's like Ireland, but it's not. And if you want that bit of Ireland, you can get it. If you want to go and get Lebanese food on a Wednesday evening, you can do that too. And whatever you want to do at that moment in time, you can do it. And I think that's how I view London.
I think for me, what I hear from that is like it's very multi-level. Like it's one of those things where it's like, yes, there's job opportunities, yes, there's people, yes, there's things, but it's all of it, and it's all of it combined, and it's all of it at the same time, and it's all these different things. And again, that would be the perspective of my perspective of London, but also the perspective of London of the people I've spoken to on this podcast, is that there is just so much of everything, and particularly when you are in your 20s and 30s, like that, and coming from, I guess, a smaller town, you know, the other people I've spoken to were from smaller parts of Ireland. It is such a shock to the system. Like for me, even I was thinking about the same time I went over a year ago, and just like I said, being on the tube, it was like the first time I had heard, seen as many people in one space. And there's something, I kind of find, I was over in New York a couple of weeks ago to see my sister, and for me, New York kind of made me feel like it breaks that routine, because it's like, oh my God, there is so much opportunity out there. And I guess for me, I'm always questioning, well, can we find that here? And what would that look like in an Irish context? And I don't know the answer to any of these things. And I guess maybe it's not for me to find out just yet. But I think, you know, to balance out the highs of London life, like those friendships, those connections you were able to build, has there been anything over the last, you know, 16, 17, 18 months that has ever made you question your decision? And there may not be. And again, if we could find ways to be more certain about our decisions, I think we probably all benefit from that. But for yourself, has there been any moment where you're like, should have stayed in Belfast, should have gone to Australia, or anything like that?
Do you know what it is for me? It's like, don't get me wrong, by the way, as much as I love London, I was focusing on the highs there. Like, it's such a lovely place for me and as a whole, right? When you really zoom out and you look at it. But I don't know of any place on earth that is just 100% perfect. It's not a perfect place. You know, if you've ever tried to get the tube home at 5 o'clock on a Friday, you're not getting on that train. You know, you will wait half an hour and you will be shoulder to shoulder budged because there are so many people. Its greatest asset is also its greatest curse in a way. And it's about when you can appreciate it and when you can't. But because of, like, even though the connections that I've made in London are really good connections, you have to work for them. Because, like I said, they do have that.
Hey, my name is Hannah, and I am the host of Greener Fields. If you're enjoying this conversation, make sure to leave us a rating, share it with your friends, and follow us on Instagram to keep up to date with all things Greener Fields.
In London, there is just sort of a general attitude of keeping yourself to yourself. And, you know, maybe that's due to, you know, safety reasons or whatever. I don't know, right? I don't pretend to be the be all and all on, end all on knowledge in London, but it's a safety point or whatever, people tend to be quite reserved. And it's for that reason that you can always spot an Irish person a mile away. Like, you just can't, because they will have that naivety. Like, you know, I've been sitting on the tube and someone's like, oh my God, you're wearing green on St. Patrick's Day, you must be Irish. And you're like, yes, I am, right? And it's like, it's refreshing, but there's a reason that it's refreshing. And, you know, you really have to work for connection in it's weird because it's such a busy city. And it's something that I've read probably a dozen times since I've actually moved out, which is the more people, the lonelier it can be. Not the lonelier that it is, but unless you really work at it, the lonelier it can be. And I found myself, you know, moving whenever I moved to London, and I was like, this was about 2 months in, and I was like, there was probably like a week that I didn't speak to anybody for any reason, and it was kind of bizarre. And I'd never had that in my life, and it was sort of that flicked the switch for me, and I was like, you know, I really have to reach out, I really have to go and sort of chase after it. Which, if you're that kind of person, great, you'll thrive and you will find whoever you need to do. And there's probably, you know, probably about 100 phone numbers in my phone I could ring now that would help if I wanted to. But when I first moved here, that wasn't the case. You really had to go after it and really look for it. And it also, there's a lot of luck in it. But that's the case with moving anywhere as well. Like, it depends on the nature of the people. Like, don't get me wrong, I've been in Ireland a few times since I got back, and I went to Cork in November, and I was walking around Cork, and I was like, oh my God, I can walk up to randomers and say things and they're not going to like scream and run away or stare at me like I've got 15 heads. There is a bit of that. And I remember the one that really highlighted it for me was the first time I went back, and I went to the cemetery, and someone just walked past the grave in Derry, and I was, you know, seeing my granddad or whatever, and he turned around and was like, God, it's a lovely day. And I'd never spoken to the man in my life. And my mum was beside me, and I looked at her and I went, I miss that. And I do. And like, even now, I miss speaking to randomers, and you know, here you kind of have to work for it and can sort of get them on side and go, trust me, I'm not terrible. And once that happens, great. But when you're home, it's so effortless to talk to someone.
I think before we even pressed record, we spoke a little bit about this kind of duality of it. And I think, again, for me, it's like this keeps coming up in these conversations. It's like, I love home, but, or I love London, but. And I think that for me, it's like this idea, it's a nice reminder that, like, I haven't met one person or had one conversation yet with someone who said, no, this is perfect. This is 100%. And I think that there is no version. I haven't met anyone with that version of this is exactly where I need to be. I'm 100% certain I don't miss anything. And I think there's something lovely about that. Like, I think there's something comforting in that. If you are listening to this, whether you're considering moving to London, you're in London, or you're in Australia, think about coming home. It's like nothing will be 100% perfect, but actually there is the good to that as well. Like, it's not going to be that. It also means that nothing will be 100% likely. Nothing will be 100% bad too. It's that kind of like yin and yang duality of both. And I guess, you know, with London, like you said, with the loneliness, again, it has been quoted to me that it is an incredibly lonely city. But I would say that I think in general, it's something I'm hoping to research with my master's at the moment is loneliness in young people in general, because I think whether it's due to social media, the post-pandemic, immigration, things like that, like we can see the stats and they are actual research so, saying that we are overwhelmingly lonelier than we have been and likely to get lonelier as the time goes on without intervention or conversation. And I think it's just important for people to hear that you can be lonely in London, but you can also not be lonely in London. But that at the end of the day, for either introverted or extroverted people, it takes effort. It takes, you know, swallowing a little bit of like, oh, like it's it, I, no one cares too much. I won't be too embarrassed. I'll say hi to the person. And when you maybe have to make more of that effort when you do move abroad, because it's not as natural or maybe doesn't come as naturally as it does at home, that doesn't mean it can't happen or you can't, you know, figure out that. And I guess for yourself, where is your head at now when it comes to this topic of home? And you know, you have gone, you're looking back onto it, you're looking back, you know, probably was home for Christmas, thinking about coming home, I'm guessing some point during the summer. Where is your head at when it comes to, yeah, looking in from the outside, in inverted commas?
It's a really weird conversation for me, especially right now. So I'm moving in with my girlfriend at the minute. So my conversation about home is going to change soon. And on that topic of loneliness as well, just to bring in the point that it's not even just making the effort. I know it wasn't him that had the quote on it, but I remember watching Tom Hanks had a video where he was just talking about how this too shall pass, right? It's a really famous video. But I think it's about understanding that, look, you feel lonely now, but if you keep putting yourself in situations where something could happen, something will happen. If you wait long enough, it will happen, right? And I sort of got flung into, like, just at that point where I was saying about 2 months in, where I started to feel really lonely. Like, I met my girlfriend, and she was like, oh my God, you know, almost overnight, that feeling went away, right? And it was that weird thing, what I had in Belfast and what I thought I was sort of working towards in a relationship point. I was like, oh, I thought the goal was the wrong goal for me. I shouldn't have been working for that. This is what I should have, this is where I should have been going from day one, right? And that sort of loneliness thing just went away instantly. And as a result, like that's, I have to put all the credit on her for that from when I got here, I really do. Mainly because she killed me if she listened to the podcast and didn't realize that I didn't say her name. But yeah, look, she was amazing and she pulled me out of it. And as a result, then, you know, really quickly I was like, I want to live with this person. I want to be around this person all the time, right? So my sense of home is a weird one because in terms of home is in Derry, I adore being a tourist in Derry. I really do. I love, like, I took the girlfriend home during the summer and we went through the sort of mountains of Donegal and drove up to the downlands of Malin Head and through Loch Salt and all these things. And we went camping on Kennego Bay. And I woke up at 4:30 in the morning and I swear to God, I have never been more speechless by how beautiful something was. I mean, the midges eating us alive did not help the situation at all. Like, there's a photo of her somewhere where, like, the hood up and tied and like a scarf around the face. But the photo that I got of that morning was so breathtakingly beautiful. And it's like, it's something that I carry with me now. It's been a wallpaper of mine. It's been, I make sure I see it because the last thing that I'd ever want is to forget why I love Derry and Ireland specifically, or more generally, sorry. But like, it's one of those ones where I just love looking at it in a positive way. I like that every time I see Ireland, it's positive. You know, well, except when I check the news and go, oh, rubbish, no, things haven't changed. But it's nice that, like, it's really nice to look at it in a positive light. Like, I'm going back in a few weeks' time, first time since Christmas. And, you know, I'll walk along the coast and I'll do the things and I'll sort of get that well up in the chest and go, oh, I really miss being here. But I know that if it was longer than about 4 days, I'd want to get out again, right? I'd be like, right, I'm ready to go. And I think for me, home isn't the place that you have to be all the time. You know, if you sat in one place for the rest of time, you get bored. It just would happen. And don't get me wrong, I'm looking forward to moving in with a girlfriend more than anything at the minute. Like, it is forefront of my mind. But if I spent every minute of every waking day in a room with her, I think I'd go insane. I really would. I'd go mental. It's just kick off. I'd be like, no, please, I need to go for a walk or something. And I think what it is for me is when it comes to home, it's where you're at your happiest, but you don't have to be there all the time. And that goes for, you know, Derry being home for me because, you know, I'm not one to say that I've ever permanently detached from Derry. I love that it's part of me and I love that I carry it with me and I love that I still, in a way, call it home. But it's not my home anymore. It's, you know, it's kind of nice. I go back and, like I said, I'm a tourist and I look at it through a different light. And I think that's how I would view home.
I think I honestly absolutely love what you just said there was, home can be where you're happiness, but it happiest, but it doesn't mean you have to be there all the time. And I really think when people hear this, they're gonna I can just think of people who are gonna be like, that's exactly how I feel too. And that's kind of the aim of this conversation is I think we won't always connect with everything everyone says, but that sentence there is like I think that is and the idea of, being a tourist to your own in, original home. Is something I know a lot of people experience because they've gone away and they come back for 2 weeks, and it's the best 2 weeks of their year because they're not working and they're traveling and they're seeing friends and family and everyone's calling for tea, and for some people that's enough to make them want to move home or to come back, but for some people that's good enough or that was worth it enough, and that like you said just because it might be a place that you are happy or maybe even happiest doesn't mean you have to be there all the time, and for me when I think of this conversation. I think, it has been absolutely lovely, like as they always are. And I think there's always so much to be gained from each guest. Like I fully fundamentally believe that I learned something, which makes me probably the wisest person in the world because I've had so many of these conversations. But I really do take so much from each guest. And I ask them on almost a selfish level to give me advice or to give us advice because I think that we can learn from each other. I think at the end of the day, we're all someone, people in our 20s and 30s, 30 somethings. The majority from Ireland or, have come to Ireland from other places. When you think about your experience over your life, but particularly the last couple of years when it comes to, making the move to London, where your head is at now, is there any little bit of advice that you can leave with us that maybe you wish you had heard earlier on?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of pieces. I think the first one for me, if I look back on my life and, you know, like I said, I wouldn't change anything, but if there was a bit of knowledge that I thought would have got me through it, is don't stay somewhere because it's comfortable. If you've got that itch in the back of your head that goes, you know what, maybe I really do want to move and maybe I want to do it, you know, life isn't permanent. I mean, I knew what I was doing the second I walked out the door, but there's nothing to say you can't go and do it for a year. And, you know, finding being comfortable, being uncomfortable, it's the biggest skill in the world. And, you know, I almost stayed and almost lived a life that, looking back, would have been a huge mistake for me because I was comfortable and I was going, you know, this is really easy and I've got stuff settled here and whatever. And that's not what life's supposed to be. Life isn't supposed to be sort of, okay, you move to the next city over and you stay there and you just stay there because it's easy, because you don't want any fuss. I mean, that works for some people, but personally, that's just not me. And I think if you're the kind of person I am, what I've just said might actually resonate in your head, that you're going, you know what? Yeah, maybe I am doing that. Maybe it is just too easy. And making decisions because they just make sense in the next step of where you're already on. You know, if you're on a path, there's nothing to say you can't turn around and walk back. There's nothing to say you can't go off to a different path. Just taking the next step in the path you're already on, it's not always the best route if it's not right for you. And I think, as well as that, you know, hanging on to what I think, if you're able to look at home and keep it at arm's length and go, do you know what? I'm really, really proud of where I'm from. I'm really, really happy that I'm from there. I will always claim that the Guinness in the Park Bar in Derry is the best Guinness of all time, and no one can ever convince me otherwise because London Guinness is awful. You know, if you can value the good things, but make sure that they don't engulf you. Like, there's always good places about everywhere. There's good things about everywhere, just the same as bad things about London. And it's about understanding how much good versus how much bad you actually want to hold on to, and what things could you still appreciate from a distance. And for me, I look at Derry and I appreciate it from a distance and I love it and I adore it, but it doesn't engulf me anymore. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like who are we to say? I think when people start saying blanket statements about young people in general, it drives me mental because I'm like, I can show you 62 versions of a very similar like from a blanket story, but 62 very different conversations and experiences and things like that. And that's why I get so annoyed when people start blanketing us off into one thing or the other, because I'm like, but that's not, and maybe it's the future psychotherapist in me. It's like, but that's not looking at the person. That's not valuing the individual as they are. That's just putting us all in one bucket and saying we're one thing or
Exactly.
the other. And I think, you know, something you also said there is that you can be very, and I think I'd be, I wouldn't say guilty of this, but I definitely do this, is that I looked so far ahead. I'm already in another place before I even stay present. And it's like you said something like, we, if it, if the next, like, just focus on the next step and look at that and try not to get too bogged down about the overwhelming picture of, you know, where are you going to settle and buy a house and grow old and die? Like that's where sometimes we can go. And I know I do that sometimes. I'm like, well, what will make me happier now? What makes more sense now? What fills up the cup that I wanted to fill, whether that's adventure or financial or friendship or community or X, Y, and Z. It's like one step at a time, because I think that prevents that overwhelm. And speaking of one step at a time, you have, you know, lived in London, will probably continue to live in London, are about to move in with your partner. What is coming up in the future? Is there anything that we can, so like, because I know people are going to listen to this, they always do. They're going to want to message you, they're going to want to support you. Is there anything that you are particularly excited about coming up?
Yeah, like, you know, I'm changing jobs, I'm moving house, and, you know, not to get too philosophical to your last point about like thinking too far ahead, but like, you know, when I was, what, full 21 and I was sitting engaged in a house in Belfast, I already knew the end destination. You don't. The end destination isn't predetermined. And just like now, it's, you know, when I look forward to my life in London at the minute, like, you know, I'm getting into this job at the minute and it's going to be amazing and I'm sure of it. And it's an amazing opportunity. And, you know, as I'm moving in with a partner, which 3 years ago seemed impossible that I'd even be doing this. And, you know, it's kind of a good thing that, like, obviously at the minute I've committed my future to London for the meantime, but there's nothing to say that if the right opportunity came up, like, I'm not someone who, you know, we talked about someone who may come back to Ireland down the line. Like, I might do, right? And I might move to somewhere like Galway or Limerick or Cork, because like I said, I was in Cork in November and fell in love with the place and was like, oh my God, I could live here tomorrow.
We all do.
Yeah. But it's one of those ones where like I don't know where I'm gonna be, and I kind of love that I don't know. It's really exciting. Like, obviously, you know, sparing some sort of catastrophe, I'd like to say that I stay in the relationship that I am now, because it's one I genuinely get a lot of meaning out of every day. So, you know, preventing some awful thing, I'm sure that'll probably still be around in some capacity. But, you know, on a business level, on a work level, on a, you know, things coming up level, I'm gonna get this job and I'm gonna just grind, because I grind 18 months to get here and I'm not done yet. And I think I would be very naive to stop at where you think the goal is, instead of going, okay, what's the next one? And I think it's just focusing on what's the next one, what's the next step, what's the next step on that path.
And I think for me, I love that answer because again, I think it's something that we could all take from. It's like so sometimes people come on here and they have these amazing projects, and I love to hear them, and I genuinely do. And if you ask me that question, I would list you off all the different things I'm going to be qualified in a year's time and all that good stuff. But actually, fundamentally, it's just the next step, which for you is starting that new job. It's moving in with your partner. It's probably getting ready for a summer in London where it's going to be really, really hot, and the parks are going to be full with people on having picnics and all that stuff. And I think that to me is such a great answer because, again, whether you're at home, abroad, or thinking about going at home or abroad, maybe it's those simple things that maybe aren't so simple after all. And yeah, I guess how can people reach out for you? Are you happy for me to share your Instagram page and we can maybe put an email or something? Because I know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can put out whatever, you know, I'll send over. I'll link you to death. You know, I'm sure. I'll send out whatever you want across. That can do an Instagram or an email or whatever. But you know, I'm one of these people, as I've said 100 times. Like, I will chat the ear off a brick wall. Like, so you know, if you want to try and if anyone wants to reach out and do it that way, I'm more than happy to offer help, because I know when I was looking at it was one of those things that like you were sort of desperate for people in that situation to give advice. Like, both people who were like, oh, I'm in London and I don't know if I'm enjoying it, what am I missing out on? Or, you know, people who are like, I really want to leave, but I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, you know, just reach out and just grab it and just work as hard as you can to make sure that it's exactly what you want to do. Because at the end of the day, my plan for the future is just to actually be settled down and be happy, instead of be settled down and look further afield again.
I think for me, it gives me literal chills, thinking about the fact that people are actually getting support from this podcast. And I think they are because I can see it. It's that even if they never end up reaching out to people, it's the comfort of like, oh my God, I feel like I was that person, or I've been there, or I've heard, or I've felt like that. And this has been another incredible example of a conversation like that. So yeah, to end this conversation, I just want to thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for listening. I know you're a listener to the podcast, which again, I want to thank every single person individually because I can't cope that people listen. I find it absolutely amazing. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been absolutely amazing.
No, it's fine, honestly. It's, do you know what it is for me? It's, as you say, like I'd sit in the tube and I feel like I'm a million miles from home. And then you hear someone talk about how they were like, oh my goodness, I was in Ireland and I was getting so itchy and I wanted to, and you're like, yes, absolutely. Yes, I was that. And you're almost screaming down the mic, which, to be fair, a lot of people in the tubes just scream for no reason anyway. So you wouldn't really look out of place. But like, you're sitting there going, I almost want to reach through my phone and hug the damn person who said it, because it's the, like, and you know, in terms of getting chills off people listening to the podcast, like, I can assure you it happens, and I can assure you people listen to it and they go, do you know what? That is my life. And I genuinely, if I was in 2022 and I was listening it in 2022, it would force me to do it, because I not only in terms of listening to people who'd moved, but also listening to people who stayed and going, I'm not that person. And understanding where you are in that sort of balance is the best thing you can, because it's not, as you've said 100 times, right? It's not about one being wrong or anything. But it's about going, which one am I? And going, do you know what? Yeah, I'm not someone who wants to stay. I'm someone who wants to push and push and push. And maybe some people go, I'm a family person, you know?
Yeah, and this is what I've learned for me is that there is so many different versions, and also to be okay with the changing of your mind, and that I think people have
Yeah.
held on to beliefs that they're one thing or the other, that they're always going to stay away, they're always going to stay at home. And I think through these conversations we hear that there's different perspectives, there's different takes, there's opportunity for change, it's never too late, and that they're not alone in this, and hopefully given a chance to feel heard and also part of something, which is life of 20 to 30 something year olds in Ireland and abroad. Like, we are a global Irish diaspora. I think it's something that I know a lot of us feel incredibly proud of. But Andre, this has been absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me on Greener Fields. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I really appreciate it, Hannah, and please don't stop doing it because it's got me through the times where I was really homesick, and it's also just it's yeah, what you're doing is amazing, and please don't stop doing
Well, not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. Thank
it.
you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of Greener Fields. To get involved, follow us on Instagram at Greener Fields and let us know who you'd like us to talk to next. Thank you so much again, and I'll chat to you really soon.